Senate Committee on Regional Affairs. With us, Senator Bert Stedman, Senator Tom Wagon, and myself, Stevens. We have three bills we're dealing with today. The order will be Senate Bill 171. Second will be House Bill 229. Third, House Bill 184. And then the fourth will be Senate Bill 179. So to begin with, Senate Bill 171, amending the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. Senator, glad you could be with us. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Wilkin, representing District E in the State Senate. Nice to be back with you. Thank you for bringing the bill back. I know you're pressed today, and so I just wanted to say a few things. I passed out today a map that Sheila found, and I thought it was very interesting, and if I'd just refer you to it. The other day there was some discussion about reaching out from current drilling activity or exploration drilling and talking about exploration. So I just wanted to show you the current status as of January of drilling and exploration in NPRA. You'll see that they're small, but you'll see the here's NPRA here that we talked about. You can see the boundary, and there's Alpine, West Alpine, just on the fringes of NPRA. And then if you move due west, you'll see some triangles with dots. Those are exploration wells. And if you measure to the scale in the upper right-hand corner, that distance from that field to the furthest out dot is 20 miles. So there was some discussion about proximity to Wainwright, Barrow. You remember those were 220 miles away. So I wanted to just bring you that map. I thought it was an excellent map. Secondly, we have taken Ms. Burke's presentation and challenge to the bill, and we have had preliminary indication she challenged the question, the authority and latitude of the legislature in analyzing ranking and funding grants. While we appreciate her efforts, we think the bill is absolutely on course to do exactly what Judge Carpinetti has told us. She did have a couple of good suggestions, which we'll incorporate into the bill when we get to finance. With all due respect, we would appreciate it to pass the bill out today. It'll go to finance, and we'll have a presentation on Tuesday as it's scheduled pending referral. So with that, I think that's all I really want to add today. And again, thank you for your consideration and your patience, and I'm available for questions if you have any.
Thank you, Senator Wilkin. Any questions of the committee? This bill has two fiscal notes, a zero fiscal note from DCCED, a small fiscal note from Legislative Affairs for travel. We have a couple of people here. Mike Black, is Mike here with the department? And what about Al Klo, also the department? Okay, so if they're not here, you're not, but we'd be delighted to have you come forward, Senator Olson, for Senate Bill 171. Would you care to come forward? Yes. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Donald Olson. I'm a state senator from the District T that includes the NPRA, and I'm glad to be here in front of your committee to go ahead and, I would say, give you the rest of the story. I've passed out to you a packet there that shows a number of maps that are there. Unfortunately, because of the computer difficulties, we weren't able to get up-to-the-date maps, but it shows that a number of points that are there. First of all, as we look at this bill, Senate Bill 171, there are a number of legal questions that have been raised in this committee during this last meeting that were there. One of the things that I would like to do and like to advocate for is that we wait until we get an opinion from the Attorney General to answer some of the questions in detail related to the legal questions that we have. As you know, the history of this bill is that there have been legal questions in the past related to the impacts that are involved, the funds that are related to it, but mainly to hear what the impact really is on the people that live in these communities. Obviously, on short notice, it's very difficult to mobilize people in a number of villages that are at this time getting ready to go out and whaling. Those people that are getting ready to provide for themselves as the springtime is coming along. I think it would only be fair to allow that to happen because this is a far-reaching bill. Certainly in the past, the people from the North Slope have been partners with the state of Alaska, and I want to commend the efforts to that effect in that there's been a successful vote to try and get ANWR on the radar screen and actually have been able to get it through. I would say to start to meddle with some of the impact monies that are headed in their direction is going to have a negative effect on the relationship that is between the Native people as well as all people on the North Slope that live in these affected communities and even outside of the communities, as well as the state's efforts to try and open up the 1002 lands that are in the northern ANWR area. As you well know, there's already been one lawsuit that's gone in favor of the plaintiffs, which happened to be the North Slope Borough, when it came down to the first time there was a serious challenge to what these impacts are. And I know in the next few days, if we could just have some time to get people on the opposite end, on the opposite side of the issue to go ahead and voice themselves, you might have a different view as to what you have right now, since we've only seen one side. But I think the main thing that I'd like to point out is that impacts mean different things to different people. And right now, the impact that is going on up there in the NPRA, on the North Slope as well as the NPRA, to just look at where the wells are is a little short-sighted, Mr. Chairman. It's one of those things that if you only see where they've been by something that's been left there, you don't see the full impact of what's going on. Obviously, on page one, that at the top of the page where it says 1974 to 1980, during the six-year period, we've got an explanation of the people of a number of dots throughout the whole NPRA area that shows oil wells, gas wells, has shown where there have been attempts to drill, drive holes that have been abandoned, suspended oil wells, and the like. More importantly, on page two, you'll see a number of lines that crisscross generally east and west and north and south. This is the map that came out just during those 6 years of seismic traffic and seismic activity during this period of time. As you can see, there is a fair amount of impact here. They're not just impacting the land, they're impacting the animals that live off the land, the migration of the caribou, the bear that are out there, and those kinds of animals, and that's just to name the ones that are there. You got ptarmigan, you got waterfowl, and those kind of things. Now, you guys here are, in fact, NRA is here this week, right? You guys are all hunters. You got this kind of activity, you bet it's going to affect the nesting waterfowl that are out there. And this is just during the six-year period, through 1974 to 1980. You know, I have to be honest with you. I have flown out of Barrow for a number of years. I've had an operation going in Barrow since 1992. I have to say that I have made money up there because of the seismic activity. The activity that's gone on with the aviation industries aviation businesses that I own are reaching out to some of these places. We're landing out there on the frozen lakes, dropping off people, picking up people, dropping off equipment, picking up people. There's a fair amount of impact, not just in the NPRA area, but if you were to draw these lines out outside of that area, it'd impact those villages as well. As we look at page 3, these are the current and proposed oil and gas lease areas that are there. As you can see, the leases that are already there are in the dark red. Certainly, they're mainly over on the eastern side. But there are existing leases that are reaching farther and farther to the west. Places that are planning, places like down in the southeast corner where the south planning area is, these are the proposed areas. There you're going to have more and more influence as you go farther west. So the impact is not just in the over in the northeast corner. The impact is throughout the whole area of the NPRA area. As you look at the next page, you go ahead and see another colored map that's there, and this has to do mainly with some of the game management that is going to be affected by this. You see the grizzly bear and as well as the caribou. The caribou obviously are a main source of protein up in this area. The other thing that you don't see quite as well are the number of rivers that are there. The other thing that I've done in my flying up there is done a lot of fish cam flying. I would say that there are in excess of at least 100 fish camp and caribou camps that are out there in this NPRA area. There are multiple ones up the Chip River. There's lots of them on the Mead River. They're not on this map, but this is because I've flown that area, and I've gone out there and landed at many of these sites hauling the individuals out to there. You start getting seismic activity out there, you bet they're going to be impacted by this stuff. So I would say, Mr. Chairman, that as you look at this bill and the questions of impact that have been raised by the bill sponsor, I would say that it's short-sighted to a certain degree until we hear at least from the people that are directly impacted, because what has been shown, especially on page 2, that's 25 years ago. And you can bet that that's old technological activity that was there. With new technology, they're going to be much more precise. They're going to, with people that are going to go out there and lease millions of dollars and put millions of dollars down on the potential leases in this area, are going to want to go out there and get new data so they can be more specific. And there's where you're going to have even more impact. So with your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, with all due respect to the sponsor of the bill that already has it scheduled in another committee, I would say we show good judgment and goodwill on the side of the state to recognize the people that are impacted till we hear from them and to hold this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Stay ready for any questions.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Any questions, Senator Wagoner?
You know, for the last, two meetings we've heard on this bill, we've heard the negative impacts of some of these things. Aren't there some positive impacts of some of these things? Could somebody address?
I'd be glad to go ahead and address that.
We got jobs, you know, there's a lot of positives that come along with some of this. Would you do that, Senator Olson?
I hope that I haven't given the misconception that there are all negative impacts to this thing. As the sponsor has pointed out there, I would say that there are more positive impacts than there are negative impacts, not so much in the area where you're dealing with the money that's there, but I would say in jobs. I would say that people going up to the Barrow go through Fairbanks. I would say that there are more jobs in Fairbanks because of what's going on up on the North Slope. In fact, it's my understanding that a number of people have shown that investments in Fairbanks have been increasing because of the possibility that they may be opened up. So I would say, yes, there are certainly positive impacts, like jobs, as you've pointed out, as well as the sale of other commercial commodities in places outside, like as I pointed out in Fairbanks.
Thank you. Senator Stedman?
Maybe I could ask the question a little different way to Senator Olson. There's a lot of projects within this issue that we're concerned about as far as meeting what would appear to be an impact need versus versus projects possibly that are questionable. At least some of us appear to be questionable. If there was no NPRA revenue source at all, just hypothetically say that wasn't available for whatever reason, is there any other benefits that the residents up there derive from the activity? You've talked about the negative impact to fish camps and hunting camps and people traipsing around and doing seismics and so on and so forth. But do they bring any economic good? Is there any jobs created or you know, lifestyles improved? Or?
I don't have that information. I can say that there certainly has been, with a responsible development in the oil industry in general, speaking as a physician that have worked up there at the Barrow Hospital, there certainly, we don't see that things like meningitis, very important bill. There was obviously a constituent of yours, Senator Wagner, that died because of that. We don't see that kind of stuff. So I'd say, in general, the lifestyle of the people that live up on the North Slope, native and non-native, has increased, has gone up a magnitude because of what's gone on there. But as far, I guess I'm assuming that you're asking if there are more jobs that are up there. I'm not familiar with that. I would assume that because of the seismic activity and the disturbance that goes on with seismic, obviously seismic has to do with the large a large amount of noise that's being made to get an echo back, so you kind of get what's an echo as to what's underneath the terrain up there. You'd have to have specialized people that are well trained, and I would say that majority of those probably do not come from Atkinson, Wainwright, even Point Lee for that matter. And so I wouldn't say that. I would like to make one point, and I don't think that it was certainly the unintentional perception that the sponsor of the bill pointed out when he mentioned things like the small boat launch area that was there in Wainwright. Obviously, as you can see by looking at the seismic activity on page 2, that as you do that, you're going to be driving things like the caribou away. In the fall time, instead of going just over the hill to catch caribou, you got to go out in the river, and then you go up either one of the rivers that are in that area. You need something like that if you're going to be going up and going all day and then coming back, especially as the winter ice comes along, something like a boat launch. Even though it's 220 miles away from Nooksit, like I said, I don't think the sponsor wanted to make that and give you that impression, but that's one of the activities that we've seen that is going to be influenced. The people are going to have to go farther with boats if they choose to go that way. They're going to have to go farther with other sources of means of transportation to get out there.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Wagner.
And Senator Olson, I don't know about the new 3D seismic, how they do it, really. I'm familiar with the other two types, and sometimes they use explosive devices, sometimes they use compressed air. But I don't think with the 3D, I don't think they use explosive devices anymore. I think it's more compressed air or whatever. But I would think if they do seismic, we'd be able to work around the calving season and some of the other problems like you're talking about. We are talking about a big area, and they could do different seismic work in different areas. I don't even know what they have planned on their sails or anything. That's something down. I think that's, but I'm not sure how much that affects this bill.
I would say that in order to hear what the impacts are, all the more reason to have people from the North Slope that are impacted by this for them to say yes. What they've seen out there as far as the work that goes on, I would assume that it goes on during the winter time because I know that's when I've been involved with much of the flying, going out of my terminal and hangar up there in Barrow, that you have those kind of activities going on during the wintertime, but caribou are there during the wintertime. Obviously, there are pregnant caribou during that period of time as well that are out there, and obviously you've got a disturbance like a release of compressed air, even if it's not an explosive, is going to have a negative effect on any kind of child-bearing caribou that are there.
Thank you for the questions. Thank you very much, Senator Olson. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have Kathy Ashby on the off-net. Kathy is with the city of Nooksup. Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes, you could identify yourself, please.
My name is Kathy, with a K, Ashby, A-S-H-B-Y. I'm the city administrator of the city of Nooksack. You should have a letter in your packet addressed to Senator Stevens, which has signature lines for each of the council members who asked to sign it. However, the winds this morning were about 35 miles an hour, and I found many other things to do so that I didn't go out in it. Our mayor has asked if he could take it around and get it signed, and it's being signed as we speak. I applaud Senator, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I applaud Senator Olson for taking such a staunch stand for the people of the North Slope Borough and for being so loyal to the North Slope Borough and for understanding many of the impacts. As I was listening to him and to some of your questions, I thought how ironic that Nooksack people are so well informed, if they choose to be, because industry people have meetings here all the time. That's not an exaggeration, to explain what they're doing and how they're doing it, and people here are very involved in letting them know what they can do and they can't do and what will affect whatever they wish choose to be harvesting, fish, ugric, muskox, caribou. I haven't heard that people here harvest polar bear, but we've had them come visit our dump a couple of times. We're that close to the Arctic Ocean. In any case, I applaud Senator Olson's support and loyalty to his district, and I also applaud Senator Wilkin for introducing this bill, because it's been my heart's desire just about since I got here, for various reasons. It has been complained that Senator Wilkin's bill opens up NPRA funds so that people who do not live in actual NPRA can apply from them. Well, you can make the case that that's already being done. The North Slope Borough applies on behalf of villages, not all of which are within NPRA. My personal contention as a city administrator, and coming from a background of a good education in public administration, as well as having lived in many parts of the state, is my contention is with, as the letter that came to you shows, is with the runaway engine that DCCED appears to be in administering grant funds. The way I read the federal law and the state statute, the compact is for DCCED to administer funds to impacted communities on behalf of NPRA, actually. It's the NPRA funds. What has happened in Nooksack is anything but that. Nooksack has been, in my mind, a stepchild to the North Slope Borough. It's gotten to keep very little that's been awarded to it. It would take me days to compile all of the grants that have been taken away from it and given to the North Slope Borough. Now, if Nooksack realized anything from that in any manner that was truly instructive or truly contributed to creating local self-sufficiency, strong local government, instead of the carryover of what has been too prevalent in some areas in the past where there's a heavy-handed connection between who you know and so forth, then if there were more real benefits for individuals in Nooksack in helping them realize more self-determination, then I suppose one could be very quiet, even though the way the award process has taken place has seemed to me to be very onerous and heavy-handed.
Miss Ashby, I appreciate your comments. I want to make sure that you are referring to the bill we have in front of us.
Yes.
I'm not sure. Something we may be getting into extraneous areas, but if you would just try to comment on the bill that we are dealing with.
Okay, the bill would take the. Thank you for rating me. The bill would take from DCCED the authority to grant the actual awards, the NPRA awards. It would place another review process with a six-member committee, and then the finance committees would make the final awards. While I personally would laud that, because I don't think DCCED is doing a credible job. That's my personal opinion. But I have a constitutional question as to whether, and I loved the way Susan Burke addressed my other constitutional questions yesterday, but I have a constitutional question as to whether the legislature really wants to take on the administrative responsibilities, if the that's something that they can deal with constitutionally, then I suppose that's all right. But the key here is that the way the grant process has been conducted and the way the grants, the NPRA grants, have been awarded will not stand the light of day if there's ever a really wonderful audit, because too much has gone to one place and it does not then filter out to the communities, as I tried to show you with one example, only one example, in my letter to you. So on the one hand, I applaud Senator Wilken for facing this and seeing that something must be done. On the other hand, I have great misgivings of us going too far. As Senator Butrovich taught me to say, throwing out the baby with the bathwater. So thank you very much for letting me speak to you.
Thank you, Ms. Ashby. I appreciate your comments, and thank you for being with us. Is there anyone further who would care to speak to us at this time? All right, thank you very much. Senator Wilken, if you'd come back.
Excuse me, before Senator Olson leaves, I got one question. This goes back a ways to either last year or year before last when we sat on Transportation Committee together. There was a proposal in front of us to build a bridge. They were where was that going to be located, if you could, in your maps? That's one thing I was interested in.
If you look on the fourth page where the Colville River is, it's going to be going across the Colville River.
Oh, okay. Up towards the top?
Toward the top and the right side.
Is that going to be above New Witsit or below it?
Actually, south of New Witsit.
South of New Witsit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
That's my question, there, Senator Wagner.
Thank you, Senator Olson. And Senator Wilken, if you wouldn't mind coming back. I'm sure this is easily explained, Senator. I want to make sure that I understand. I'm looking at page 3, lines 19 through 21, and I want to make sure I understand this. It says, when under this subsection, the department has been advised of the special committee's recommendations for award of grants, the department shall notify municipalities of that action. That's lines 19 through 21. When the department has been advised of special committee's recommendations, the department will notify municipalities of that action. Am I missing a step there? Does it go from the special committee to notification? Doesn't it go through the legislature? Maybe you can clarify that, Senator Wilken.
Mr. Chairman, I think what that is saying is the special committee's recommendation, that would be the recommendations to the finance committee, that the department would just notify the municipalities. Is that?
Yeah, I think that's what I'm getting at, and maybe something's missing in there. You might just look at it. Maybe
you're saying has it gone through the full legislative process,
right?
The capital budget,
right?
Right.
And maybe that's implied, but it's something
might. Well, certainly the intent of the bill. We'll clean that up and make sure that that's not addressed somewhere else. But it's certainly the way the system works is that the special committee recommendations will go to the full finance committees,
right,
and be incorporated into the capital budget.
Certainly.
So
that was my understanding.
Thank you for highlighting that. We'll clean that up and make sure that that's a little more clear.
Thank you, Senator Wilken. Any further questions of Senator Wilken? And no department people here. Senator Wagner.
Well, I was going to say, we had some other people that had wanted to testify. You might check, see if they're here.
Is there anyone else who, actually, we had a couple of people who were here just, who might be here just for,
questions.
Yeah, for questions, if we have them. Let's see, that would be Mike Black, Community Advocacy for DCCED, and I think he's listening and not here to speak. Unless, Mr. Black, are you here? Would you care to speak? And there's also Al Klo from the also from DCCED. Is Mr. Klo here or on the air? Okay, I'm sorry. All right.
Just a question, Senator Wilkins. If we move this to finance, then what's the procedure from there? And the reason I ask this for a good reason, because going back to what Senator Olson said, we plan to hold hearings on the North Slope this year anyway, pertaining to Senate Bill 85, known as the Dalton Highway Bill. And I'm just wondering if we do that, and if you're going to hold this in finance, we could incorporate additional hearing from some of these areas in that at that time.
Good Chair. Thanks, Senator Wagner. My intentions would be, and I think Senator Olson said it in his statement, this is a far-reaching bill. This is not something to shove through in the last 2 weeks of a session. My intentions are to get it to finance, make a presentation in finance, have input as we've gotten already from this committee and those that have been before the committee. We have to make some decisions on what the legislature may want to do with the existing $24 million in grants, whether we want to take some action on those based on some criteria, or we want to work the legislation through over the interim. But it's not my intention at all, Senator Wagner, to move this out of finance this year. Again, it's far-reaching. We want to make sure we do it right. There'll be a lot of things said about this bill, and we want to work through every one of those. But when you get right down to it, it's a very simple bill. The federal government recognized there may be some impact to communities because of NPRA. They put that in the law. It's now time, because of what Judge Carpinetti challenged the legislature in 1986 to do what he said we should do, participate with our authority to prioritize and to fund. And we want to do that with clear rules. And we want to do it so that people that are impacted are treated fairly, and the rest of the state at the same time is also treated fairly, so that we all participate in the bounty of NPRA, just not a select few of Alaskans. That's what this legislation is about, and we'll work it through next year.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Wilson. Questions, comments? Okay, Senator Wagner.
I'd move Senate Bill 171 with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator, and this will go on to Senate Finance. Is there any objection to that? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Okay, so I've been asked to do a roll call vote, please. Yes.
Senator Wagner.
Yes.
Chair Gary Stevens.
Yes. Yes, Senator Stevens.
I'm just curious why there was a roll call vote.
I'll tell you later.
Okay. It was just a request, and there's no problem in going to a roll call vote. Glad to do that. All right, thank you very much. Anything else I need to do?
There was also a fiscal note, 1-0 and 1-0.
Oh, yes, and it was
including
the fiscal notes, the two fiscal notes.
Still on record.
Yes, so we'll include those two fiscal notes.
Take a quick recess.
Okay, a very brief recess. Number 229, relating to reinstatement of Native Corporations. Representative Foster's office. Yes, sir.
Paula Bowl from Representative Foster's office.
Thank you for being with us, Paul.
Thank you.
Any comments you care to make other than we've already heard from earlier?
Chairman, no, I think we've pretty much covered everything I can think of.
Tell me why we keep hearing this every once in a while.
Basically, what happens is we rotate through leadership in the corporations, and every once in a while we get corporation leaders who are not necessarily as savvy as the predecessors were. So it's not always the same native corporations, but we get, you know, four or five different ones here and there that fall behind just because the leadership's not up to speed with what's necessary to keep the corporation running.
And often very small corporations, and often sort of marginal sometimes, funding of them and that sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, Chairman, it's almost always, and as this bill states, is strictly village native corporations, so it doesn't apply to the regional native corporations.
Thank you, Paul. Any further questions?
Oh, I think we've seen this before.
We'll probably see it again. yes, Senator Wagner?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd move House Bill number 229 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Thank you. Is there any objection? Do you want a roll call vote on that, sir?
Please.
Roll call vote, please.
Senator Wagner.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
Chair Gary Stevens.
Yes.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Paul. The third item we'll deal with is 184 relating to firearms. And let's see. Just 1 second.
This is the packet we have.
Okay.
Very short. There
you are.
And it's short.
Okay, House Bill 184 relating to firearms from Representative Chenault's office. Yes, sir, you can identify yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Eric DeLand, staff member for Representative Mike Chenault. This bill was introduced to ensure that citizens be able to look at one law as the single and final authority regarding firearm regulation. The bill will guarantee consistency with firearm laws within the state of Alaska. And Brian Judy is here from the NRA to speak to the bill, and he is joined by a former staffer, Jennifer Uhas, and I respectfully defer testimony to them.
Thank you, Eric. Yes, sir, if you'd come forward, Mr. Judy, if you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brian Judy. I'm the Alaska State Liaison for the National Rifle Association, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the 24,000 NRA members who live and reside in the state of Alaska, and I urge your support for House Bill 184. It's legislation that would strengthen and broaden the existing state firearms preemption statute. The current law only very narrowly limits local municipalities' ability to restrict in two areas. First is on the right to own or possess firearms within a residence, and second is the transportation of unloaded firearms in a vehicle. Any other restrictions currently could be imposed by local municipalities. Further, existing law would allow restrictions in those two aforementioned categories if approved by the voters. And we believe that this is not right. We believe that the rights, the fundamental constitutional rights of even of a minority of the people should not be able to be restricted by a majority of voters at some point in the future should they decide that they want to support such a restriction. This bill will provide for a standardization of all the firearms laws throughout the states based on the current and the future statutes enacted by the legislature. It would make null and void any ordinances that are more or less restrictive than state law. I want to emphasize, however, that it would not lessen the existing body of state or federal laws. The problem with local firearms ordinances is one of sheer variety. Where there are no uniform laws, it creates a complex patchwork of differing laws, and it's really unfair, in our view, to require citizens to understand and know all the different laws and put at risk of violating laws by merely a lack of knowledge of them. Where inconsistent ordinances are in place, basically it puts law-abiding citizens with no criminal intent in the possibility of violating unwittingly firearms laws that they don't know exist. Further, anti-gun proposals and restrictive ordinance at the local level threaten honest firearm owners' rights and the fundamental American principle of equal protection. The necessary criminal laws, in our view, should be enacted at the state level because a uniform application of all laws treats the citizens fairly, and it also, also we believe that all citizens should benefit from the criminal laws imposed. They should all benefit equally from those criminal laws that are determined to be needed. To prevent the problems with a patchwork of laws, currently 45 states now have firearms preemption laws on the books. In fact, the state of Kansas just passed one. It was just signed by the governor last week. Right now, Alaska's firearms preemption law is among the weakest, and we believe that it should be strengthened and should be broadened. So with that, I urge your support for this bill. I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Judy. Any questions? Senator Stedman?
Maybe the sponsor could help. Around the state, how many municipalities have more restrictive ordinances, municipal ordinances, than the state?
You know, I can speak to that, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, with respect to one specific issue that I'm aware of. 2 years ago, there was legislation passed by the legislature that repealed the requirement that a permit be possessed by a person to carry a firearm concealed for self-protection. And I believe there are 8 municipalities that currently have laws requiring a permit on the books. So I know with respect to that law, there are at least 8 that I've been able to verify researching. There are a number of municipalities that have, and I suspect you're going to hear from some municipalities later on in this hearing, that are going to be opposing this bill, and based on the fact that they have municipal ordinances that are going to be overturned, and I believe that in the vast majority of the cases, except for instance the one that I just referred to with regard to carrying concealed, I believe that the state law, you know, with regard to schools, for example, that's an issue that's been raised, and there's a state law dealing with firearms in schools. With regard to bars, there's a state law that restricts possession of firearms in bars. So I believe in virtually all the cases, discharge of firearms was another one that received a great deal of testimony on the House side, and the bill was actually amended on the House floor to allow municipalities to enact discharge ordinances. So to answer your question, I don't know. I know there are some on the one issue. There are local ordinances, but I think for the most part they're relatively consistent with state law. One of our big concerns is what could happen in the future, and we want to prevent the passage of very restrictive gun control laws on the local level down the road.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Judy. Hopefully we'll be here. There may be some more questions that pop up as we go along. And
sure, yeah.
Appreciate your saying. Thank you. Several other people who have asked to speak to us. Jennifer Uhas. Hi, Jennifer. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jennifer Uhas. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Outdoor Council. We are a nonprofit umbrella organization for over 54 member clubs, 4,000 individual members, and a collective membership of over 12,000 individuals in Alaska who hunt fish, shoot traps, snow machine, boat, ATV, and we are also the state association for the NRA. You should have a copy of our previously provided written testimony from one of the previous committees of referral for this bill, and I'd just like to echo everything that Brian Judy said, that the Alaska Outdoor Council enthusiastically supports this bill. We believe it would more fully recognize our already constitutionally guaranteed right to firearm ownership, and that it would eliminate confusion for Alaska's law-abiding citizens and remove some of the undue pressures of our already extended enforcement authorities. And I'm available for any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Any questions?
No.
Well, we're missing you around the halls here, but you're gainfully employed, and congratulations, and glad to see you back.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Sherry Roosh from Chugiak. And if you'd identify yourself and tell me if I messed up your name.
No, you did an extremely good job, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, please.
Thank you for allowing me to testify, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name's Sri Roosh, and I extensively work with training 4-H youth in shooting sports, and it would benefit us greatly that all the laws are consistent within the state, because we are wanting to expand our shooting education for safety for the youth to make sure that less accidents happen, and therefore we wouldn't have to worry if, let's say I'm going to Valdez to do training, that I have to worry that carrying the shotguns and the pistols and the rifles or whatever I have for equipment purposes are not correct within their ordinances. Any questions?
Senator Wagoner?
How many 4-H chapters do safety training for firearms for youth?
The way 4-H works is due to the intensity of our training. We have 8-week basic courses, and any adult that does 4-H shooting sports has to be trained by a 4-H instructor, so therefore that they are used to working with children, because they found that not all adults, even though they may be excellent shooters, are excellent with working with kids. So therefore, we make sure that they know how to work well with youth, as well as know how to work with firearms. So it depends. So what I'm saying is that we travel around, and not every 4-H club will necessarily work with firearms because they have that option. But what we want to make sure is that it's more widespread so they have that knowledge.
One other question, yes, not pertaining to the bill or anything, and I mm-hmm. should know this, but I don't. What are the requirements for a young person to get a hunting license?
They have to take the hunter safety course.
Okay. Prior to a certain age or up to a certain age, and after that they don't need to present one?
No, I think anyone within the state of Alaska born after 1986 is how it was originally done, is required take
course.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
I took mine when I
was 10. Shannon Day from Bethel. Miss Day. If you'd identify yourself, please.
My name is Shannon Day. I live in Bethel, Alaska. I know in Bethel we do carry a lot of pistols, so if we carry a pistol, like if we have it on our belt or something in a gun loop, and we have our jacket over because it does get cold at night. So if we come into town and we get carried in, we take our jacket off before we get in our car. Police stops us for some unknown reason, and then we carry a lot of guns because we hunt a lot. I am a rifle team. I'm here at the NRA, and I agree to pass this amendment. So I don't know.
Well, thank you, Shannon. I appreciate your comment and your bravery in coming up in front of a Senate committee like this, a bunch of old guys. but thank you for doing that. Any questions of Shannon?
No. Thank you very much for testifying.
Thank you. Ashley McDougall of Houston. Ms. McDougall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ashley McDougall. I'm 15, and I'm from Houston. I'm here with the NRA, and I encourage you to pass House Bill 184, because if my dad and I go hunting, I don't want to have to worry about getting in trouble for driving innocently with a firearm to find a good hunting area. And thank you. I guess that's it.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions? Thanks very much, Ashley. Victoria Cohen. If you'd identify yourself, please.
I'm Victoria Cohen. I'm from Wasilla. And I would like you to pass the House 184 bill. My family is big in hunting, and so when my grandfather and my grandmother come up here, I really don't want to worry about what type of certain weapons to use. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions? Thanks very much, Victoria. Lindsay. Lindsay, your writing is as bad as mine. Is it Grinnan?
Yes.
Okay. If you'd come forward, please. Okay, okay. I'm sorry, I see that you said no. Thanks very much. Well, I didn't need to put you on the spot. Heidi Shepherd?
Hi, Mr. Chairman. My name is Heidi Shepherd, and I'm from Fairbanks. And I'd just like to let you know that I support Bill 184, and I urge you to pass it.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate your coming to testify to us. Sasha Roush? Oh, Sasha, you said no as well. Do you? Okay.
Getting braver as everybody else testified.
I assume you have some connection with the earlier Roush.
Cherie Roush is my mother. For the record, my name is Sasha Roush. I am from Chugiak. I shoot shotgun professionally, and I would prefer it to go anywhere in the state without getting yelled at for breaking the law.
It would be a good idea, yes. Thank you very much, Sasha. Appreciate your time. The young man from Kodiak, Luke. Luke, if you'd come forward. Luke clearly knows what he's talking about. He's from Kodiak. So, if you identify yourself, Luke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Luke Engvall, and I support House Bill 184 because of the convenience it would provide to anyone who is carrying firearms throughout the state and not having to worry about different laws and different ordinances. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Luke. Appreciate your time. Amanda Absher from Copper Center. Amanda is... No as well. I'm sorry. Unless you change your mind, Amanda. What about Benjamin Smith?
Oh, he's hiding behind the door.
You did a good job of protecting the chambers yesterday. Thank you, Benjamin. Please go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Benjamin Smith, and I am from Eagle River, Alaska. I'm in favor of this bill because it further protects my constitutional right to keep and bear arms. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Benjamin. And Justin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Justin Shattuck, and I'm from Chugiak. And when I'm of legal age, I intend to purchase and carry concealed a firearm for personal protection. And I don't want to have to worry about traveling to different cities in Alaska and running the risk that I am in a city that does not allow one to transport a concealed weapon illegally, when in the city that I was just in, it allows me to carry it legally. And it is for this reason I come before you today to urge you to support House Bill 184. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Justin. I'd just like to express my appreciation to all of the young people who are here today and their willingness to get up here and speak in front of us. Senator Wagner.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd just like to have a little test here, and I'd like to ask the students that are here if they feel that this is a very valuable two-day experience compared to being in school. I'd have a show of hands. I think it's unanimous.
Kathy Wasserman, put your hand down. Thank you very much.
Well, we're glad to have you here, too. I think it's very important that you come and see how your government does work.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Continue with young people. Sue Wright. Ms. Wright, is she here? No. Well, from Representative Chenault's office. Kathy Wasserman.
Hard act to follow.
Still in school, are you, Kathy?
That's right.
Notice your hand went up.
I know. For the record, my name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm a bit over 15. I've just had a hard life. That's why I look this way. First of all, Mr. Chairman, AML had some reservations with this bill, not because of the ability for people to transport firearms from one jurisdiction to another. We had a concern with the word use, and I have to say until today I saw the amendment, and it looks like that has been resolved. I would hope that word reasonable does not become too difficult to work with, but certainly I think AML would withdraw its discomfort with this bill if municipalities feel that they can prohibit people from firing arms within certain areas of their boundaries. And that was our concern, was that word use and the ability to have ordinances which would stop people from discharging in places where it was probably not safe. Because unlike probably most of these kids, there are some people, I can give you names, who are not very safe with their guns. And so that was our only concern.
Thank you, Kathy. I appreciate those comments. So you are comfortable with the amendment that was made on the House side, which dealing with discharge of firearms, allowing municipalities to do that?
That was the concern of the municipalities that we heard from, was that word use, which then translated, would they be able to have ordinances that had requirements of where you could and could not discharge firearms within city limits?
Thank you very much.
And we will remain concerned with that if that should drop off.
Certainly, I understand that. Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Wasserman? Thank you, Kathy.
Kids and I are going to go somewhere now.
She wants to enroll in a firearm safety program.
I've already taken it.
Okay.
We have some people from Kenai. We'll start there with Scott Heyman. Mr. Heyman? Mr. Heyman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and fellow committee members. I do appreciate this opportunity to come before you today. My name is Scott Heyman. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and I live in Kenai. I think it's just this bill is very prudent. I do a lot of traveling around this state, and sometimes if I'm out camping, I'm carrying a pistol in my pocket and for personal protection. And I think it's just common sense that I should have to look to one state law to make sure that I'm being legal. And it's awful hard for me to check into the books on every little burg along the way to make sure that I'm legal. And I applaud this legislation and urge you to support it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hammond. Any questions, Senator Wagoner? You must know this fellow.
I just wanted to say hello to Scott and ask him how everything's going in Kenai.
Very good, Senator. Thank you.
Good to hear from you.
You too.
We have another Kenai person on the line here with Kerry Graves. Mr. Graves?
Thank you. My name's Kerry Graves, and I'm the city attorney for Kenai, and my testimony is going to be along the lines of Kathy Wasserman's. The city got involved originally because we have an ordinance that prohibits discharge of firearms in the residential areas of the city, but allows it in the non-residential areas. And we were worried that the original version of House Bill 184 would, in effect, repeal that ordinance. And as Ms. Wasserman, I believe Mr. Judy indicated, the amendment that was made on the floor, the House floor on 184, alleviates that concern by allowing municipalities to provide reasonable restrictions on the discharge of firearms. So it's our belief that amendment will protect our city ordinance, which we feel is a good ordinance and has broad support in the community. So I would urge you to keep that language in House Bill 184. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Also, often we have Denny Kay. Mr. Kay?
This is Denny Kay Weathers.
I'm sorry, female.
Kay. That's okay. It happens all the time. And I want to thank those youth that came in, too. I was glad to hear that. It's not very often I hear it. I also faxed my testimony in so you had it in written form. I strongly support HB 184 as it supports the Second Amendment rights of we the people. In Cordova, Alaska, a rural community, the city council has been making ordinances against gun owners that go directly against both the state and U.S. Constitution. I'm going to stop right there to let you know these weren't voted on by the people either. They were just ordinances made by the city. Next, a few years back, one such ordinance in Cordova was made that said a person could not have bullets in their guns while traveling through the city. But a city councilman told us on the radio that it would not be enforced. About a month or two after it was passed, my youngest son, then in his 20s, was going from his fishing boat up the dock to a friend's car with a rifle slung over his shoulder, and he was accosted by the city police officer who wanted to take his bullet, possibly his gun, and fine him. These kind of lies are not only unconstitutional, but need to be stopped, and HB 184 is a good start. I would really encourage you guys to pass it. There's been several other ordinances here in Cordova. You can't have even BB guns, dart guns, this and that, and they just keep passing them. And I was shocked to hear you guys said they must be voted on. So I was glad to hear all of the testimony from you guys, too, and from the NRA. So please pass 184. It's a good start to getting back our Constitution. Any questions?
No, but thank you very much, Ms. Kay. Appreciate your comments.
Okay, thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the room that would care to speak to us at this time? Very well. I pressed a motion, Senator Wagoner.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill number 184, /A.A, with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations, and ask for a roll call vote.
Thank you. There are two zero fiscal notes. Roll call vote, please.
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
Senator Wagner.
Yes.
Chair Gary Stevens.
Yes. Yes. Okay, thank you all very much. The next issue we want to deal with is Senate Bill 179 relating to the taxation of mining property, contracts approved by municipalities for payment in lieu of taxes. Is Senator Terrio's office of Senatorial. Well, there you are. Okay, go ahead, Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for bringing Senate Bill 169 back up for consideration today. I'd like to take a few moments to bring the committee members up to speed on discussions that have been ongoing since earlier this week to address some of the concerns that have been brought up by various entities. I'd like to start with some technical issues that have been cleared up, can be cleared up fairly easily. With the passage of this bill, we do not intend for somebody other than the state assessor's office to conduct the assessment of full and true value for the mining property subject to tax in AS 4367010. In conversation that I had with Mr. Van Zandt from the state assessor's office today, I understood that concern and assured him that it was not our intent to have anybody other than his office do that assessment work. That was a complication that was brought up in the way the bill was drafted. It was not my intent, so we'll work with Legislative Legal to clear that language up. Next, there is no intent to allow an area that is annexed to be left at the 4 mil rate that the state would charge for the contribution to local education. It was my intent that if a borough did form or a borough or an area was annexed into an existing borough, that they would be able to take the 4 mils that were being taxed and bump it up the extra 2 mils up to a total of 6. So it was not my intent to discriminate between a newly formed borough or an area that was annexed. And again, that can be cleared up, I believe, with the modification of the language with the drafters. In addition, it appears we need to clarify the language at page 6, lines 16 and 17. We need to make it clear that the property used in the production of minerals is not exempted. Okay, so again, we want...
Just one moment. Let's make sure we're all on the same... again, the page number is...
Page 6. Lines 16 and 17, which is there's a list of things that are exempt from taxation, and we want to make it very clear that everything that is involved in the production of the minerals is subject to taxation. That's what we're trying to do, is tax that economic activity that is the production of the mineral, or the mining and production of the ore. And we've submitted some language to the drafters that will clarify that. Finally, the major question that needs to be answered is whether or not this bill would leave enough flexibility to allow an area to incorporate, but also provide certainty for purposes of securing financing for very large projects. And we know that the Donlin project is likely to be a project where they have to go to secure financing for a billion-dollar-plus project, billion-dollar-plus infrastructure. I have done some research and looked at the taxes levied by municipalities around the state currently. And generally speaking, the total mill rate levied against mines is in the single digits. An and very often is complemented with some other sort of revenue base. There's exceptions to that rule. Of course, we have the Northwest Arctic Borough, where a payment in lieu of taxes is paid, and the Fairbanks North Star Borough, where there is a double-digit property tax that is levied against Fort Knox. In examining the mill rates around the state, it appears that it is the larger, primarily rail belt areas that tax at that higher rate. And, of course, it's in that rail belt area where a higher level of services are also provided. Another issue that is worth pointing out is the level of services provided by the given municipalities. While the rail belt municipalities provide multiple services, such as water, sewer, garbage, roads, police, and fire protection, those services are not necessarily provided in all parts of the borough. And right here in Juneau, the city and borough of Juneau has divided the roaded area from the non-roaded area into different service areas, and so that the Greens Creek mine and the prospective Kensington mine are taxed at a lower rate of 6.6 mils. So the Greens Creek mine, tremendous economic activity here in the unified city and borough of Juneau, but they recognize that due to its detachment and distance, there's only a certain level of services that are afforded to the mine property and the mine activity, and therefore it's taxed at a lower millage rate. And the 6.6 is fairly close, of course, to the 6 mils that I've asked for in the bill before you. So in essence, Mr. Chairman, I think that we have struck a reasonable balance in the bill. I'm prepared to work with the different individuals on how to get there and would certainly entertain ideas and suggestions. But it is important to keep in mind that the reality is that unless we can give some certainty to the tax consequences and tax load going forward, there are some mineral deposits that are in areas of the state where it is questionable whether the financing can be secured, the jobs can be created, the infrastructure can be created to level any sort of taxation on unless we have some certainty going forward. So with that, I'm willing to answer questions. I think, there certainly are a lot of ideas that have percolated around in the building over the years with regards to the ability, the willingness of unorganized area in the state of Alaska to contribute money for some of the services that they provide. I believe we are perhaps reaching a point where perhaps a package of bills can move forward that do generate, help to, number one, generate the economic activity and the job creation, levy reasonable taxes on that activity, and I believe ultimately areas that come up to a certain level of economic activity and local sophistication will want to take control of that activity and will form a local government around it rather than have us, the legislature, sit as their assembly. It will become apparent to them that they have reached a level where they are paying taxes or the economic activity in their area are contributing taxes, but the people that decide on how that tax money gets utilized are coming from Kenai, Anchorage, downtown Fairbanks, and they're going to want to exert that local control eventually and will want to form local governments in areas where it makes sense.
Thank you, Senator Terrio. Any questions? Thank you very much, Senator. We have several people that wish to speak to us. Trustee Strain? Okay. Mr. Clow, would you care to begin?
Thank you, Senator Stevens. For the record, Al Cloud, Deputy Commissioner, Commerce and Community and Economic Development. We'll be fairly brief. In looking at this, I would say the department's first reaction was that the proposal has considerable merit, and we would like to very much thank the sponsor and the industry groups that worked to develop this piece of legislation. However, that being said, there are several issues that merit attention. I know Senator Terrio spoke to the issue of the state assessor being involved in his assessment role, and we would concur with that. it's interesting that this legislation came to Commerce, because we view it as having three kind of main areas, and all three of those the department is statutorily involved with. First of all is the role of the state assessor, and there are legitimate questions that the assessor has discussed with the sponsor and others in various fairness issues and such on how property is assessed and valued statewide, and we consider those important, and obviously those will be discussed as this thing moves forward. Also, the department, of course, has a community role through our Division of Community Advocacy, and certainly statutory restrictions on what would normally be the powers of a municipality are of concern. Certainly not an unusual thing for a state or a more superior form of government to impose on a lower form of government, but of concern to the department. We certainly would not want this legislation to be viewed as a disincentive to regional government formation. We don't necessarily think that it is, but that's a pertinent issue that needs discussion. And finally, as Senator Terrio aptly pointed out, the economic development interest of this is certainly important to us. The absolute necessity to add stability into what is a very long-term and significant investment in a major mining project is a huge incentive for people to come to Alaska and explore and develop some of these mines that are going to take literally billion-dollar investments. So we see these as not necessarily severely competing interests, but each one is a valid issue that merits discussion in trying to put this together. I guess from the department's perspective, we view this as it's kind of there's an algebraic equation here to marry up the economic development interest, the community interest, and the interest of the state assessor in a fair tax regime for everyone. You know, what the variables are that all can agree with on that equation, if I were king, I'd be happy to put them out, but I don't think that's on my business card today, so I'll leave that to you folks to figure out. But we would hope that that equation can be solved, and we look forward to working with the sponsor or anyone else to try to help implement that. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Clow, I'm a little surprised at your testimony. This committee is the only committee in the state legislature, the state senate, that deals with the communities. And I'm certainly understand the idea of wanting to make sure the industry operates and giving them some stability, but you seem to have almost abrogated your responsibility to represent communities. Am I missing the point?
No, not at all. If I came across that way, I certainly apologize.
Because here's the issue to me. I mean, we want to encourage industry, but on the other hand, by constitutional mandate, our responsibility is to try to borough-ize the entire state. And unless I missed what you said, you seem to gloss right over that.
No, I very much apologize if that was the impression, because I did not mean to gloss over that whatsoever. I think I could state in the very strongest of terms that we've had considerable discussion in the department on whether or not this bit of legislation would be contrary to the formation of borough government. And we probably spend, you know, we've been debating that internally since this came out. And that is a major concern of the commissioner and of the department. If I seem to gloss over that, I apologize, because I did not mean to at all. What I meant to say is that the local government has a very legitimate concern in here, and we very much recognize that and acknowledge it. We would hope from the department's perspective that the local government concern and the development concern and the assessor concern could be melded together in something they all could agree to made sense and met their, you know, about the typical balancing act. But if I came across as trying to downplay the significance to the local government, I apologize. I did not mean to do that at all.
Thank you, Mr. Klein. Any further questions? Thank you very much for your comments. We have Steve Van Sant, the state assessor. Mr. Van Sant.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Yes, you're here for only answers, or do you have any comments you care to make?
Mr. Chairman, I'm here to answer any questions the committee may have.
Any questions of Mr. Van Sant? Is this a major issue, Mr. Van Sant? It's a bill that has enormous repercussions. As the assessor, I'm not even sure where to begin asking you questions, but if you have nothing prepared to say, or if there are no questions from any other members. Mr. Van Sant, you did send us a March 17th a memo, clarification of value estimates for Tanana Basin Borough. It's a couple of pages. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Steve Van Sant. I'm the state assessor with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And the paper you're talking about is an estimate of value for the proposed Upper Tanana Basin Borough. This was in response to a lot of requests that we have gotten over the years to use the values that we had come up with for REAAs several different times. And unfortunately, those estimates were based on models that we built here in the office, and we'd never been in the field to ascertain whether or not, how much property was there. So for the last year, we've been working in the Delta, Tok area, actually physically inspecting all property and building models. We built over 200 value models to come up with an estimated value of that proposed borough. And that summary page you have in front of you basically reflects that total estimate. In that is a value for the Pogo mine. And quite frankly, right now, there's very little paperwork that we had. And talking with a representative from Pogo, Mr. Carl Hanneman, we used the estimate of total expenditure that they expected to have in there of about $250 million. As of this year, they were only about 50% complete, so I think we were only using 50% of that. If the borough were formed, we would actually go in and do a detailed inspection and analysis of their books to come up with an estimated value, same as we would, and in fact, same as we did with the Red Dog Mine in Northwest Arctic Borough. So unless you have further questions, I think that pretty well covers what water activities were in that area.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Van Sant. Any questions? Thank you very much. Mr. Fugue is also with us with Placer Dome. You say just answers, Mr. Fugue. Do you have any comments you care to make, or are you just here for questions?
Yes, Senator, thank you very much. I don't have any comments at this time other than to reiterate industry support for this bill. We consider it very important for the reasons presented before and really to answer any questions anyone may have.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Fugue. I appreciate your being with us. Pat Slichting from Delta Junction, are you with us? Pat Slichting?
Are you there? Oops.
Hello, Pat Slichting?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you for letting me speak. The new mining tax requested by the Alaska Mining Association in Senate Bill 179 and...
Identify yourself and who you represent.
This is Pat Slichting from Delta Junction, and I represent myself as a Delta Junction resident.
Okay, I'm sorry to have interrupted you. Go right ahead, Mr. Slichting.
Thank you. The new mining tax requested by the Alaska Mining Association in Senate Bill 179 and House Bill 280 is not good for Alaska, existing boroughs, unorganized areas, or communities considering borough formation. The amount of tax being offered is paltry, and the terms locked in are locking in the proposed tax rates for a 15-year period are reprehensible. The legislation that is being generated and pushed at legislators represents corporate greed by companies which are primarily foreign. Mining companies will be taxed only on the value of proposed of personal property. With a depreciation schedule applied, the 4 to 6 mil contributions are in a steady decline, although the actual production remains steady or may increase. Any other method of rate of taxation by the state or municipalities would be signed away for 15 years if this legislature passes. tax revenue based on mineral value is not allowed. These terms would stifle growth in new boroughs and create disparate tax rates between existing and developing boroughs. As stewards of the resources in the unorganized areas, legislators have the responsibility to levy a responsible mineral mining tax in the absence of organized local government. One such tax, which would be fair, would be a severance tax. Share the risk and share the wealth. When a borough forms, that responsibility should be transferred to the local municipality along with the tax dollars generated by those mining assets. I am alarmed at the suddenness of these two bills and the lack of input solicited by legislators from constituents. Since the Mining Association is present in Juneau pushing its special interest legislation, input for fair laws appears to be unequal. The message relayed is the rich corporations are privileged, which grants them special access to lawmakers and allows them to set their own tax rates and terms. That is wrong. Please do not pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Slickling. Senator Wagoner and then Senator Stedman.
Mr. Slickling, are you aware of the state taxes that currently would be levied on a mining operation, such as corporate taxes, licensing taxes, and royalties?
I'm aware of them. I also recognize that there is a cost for state oversight. I also recognize, as of last week in a newspaper article, that in some instances, playing the tax game allows these mining corporations not to pay any state tax.
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Wagoner. Senator Stedman.
I'm a little confused. My understanding of the bill is that the tax would be at the true value of the real and tangible property and not at a book value carried by the corporation, and the assessment would be made by the state assessor. And looking back when the large industrialized logging started and took place in Southeast Alaska, they brought in, the communities brought in outside professional assessors because the mill sites were large and with a lot of capital expense to put them in place, and they, quite frankly, didn't have the ability to assess them. So the communities brought in professional outside assessors to help them with valuing the industrial site. This appears to be a similar structure where the state would come in with their assessor and put a value on it, which should be fairly accurate. The issue of putting a cap on a tax or some kind on the property tax or coming up with some other mechanism so industry will know when they try to figure out to go forward or not their true costs as accurate as they can going forward is a positive thing for the state to do. A 6-mil tax or a 4-mil tax, depending on whichever one of the two they're going to come under, could be a substantial revenue stream for the surrounding area. And these are large, expensive developments. So I don't agree with some of the comments of the last fellow that testified. I think most of them were inaccurate and misleading at best. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Sir Seven. For the questions? Anyone else appears to speak to the committee at this time?
No, I've just got to say that this has caused me serious concerns. I'm really of a split mind. Senator Terrio, I agree that we want to try to establish stability for the mining companies so they can develop. I'm just concerned that at the same time, if we say 6 mills max, 4 mills education, 2 mills for the running of the government, if should a government evolve. I'm just afraid that that might be a real disincentive for the development of boroughs and local municipalities. I'd like to spend some time on this. I think it needs some further study. I'd like to hear from the department. I'd like to hear from the commissioner where he stands on this. I haven't heard from him. I guess, you know, maybe there's some other options out here, Senator Terrio. I mean, I do know that the legislature sets as the assembly of the unorganized boroughs. And just as a thought off the top of my head, what would be wrong with the legislature determining what that property tax should be on a regular basis in areas that do develop mining? Certainly, we don't want to overtax and ask the mines to pay for unnecessary, you know, borough government. But of course, in Fairbanks, where substantial services are provided, there's, I believe, a 16 mill tax. In Juneau here, there's a tiered tax, so that the greens, the mine here, pays a smaller amount because they don't get the service of the borough. That should be studied, it seems to me. Maybe some step taxation. But I just, you know, it is this committee's responsibility and no other committee in the state legislature, in the state senate, to be aware of communities and to watch out for communities. That's our job. That's our charge. That's our responsibility. And I'm just hesitant to pass this bill out at this time with those concerns. And maybe they can be rectified very shortly, but I know you understand my concerns there.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, with the comments that I made, it certainly was my intent to work with you and your staff on a proposed CS. As I mentioned, I believe we can clarify the issue of the assessing entity, working out with the Mr. Van Sant's office on how that language should be modified. Some questions about the depreciation, and I believe the language that's in the bill right now is patterned after a part of the regulations that Mr. Van Sant's office operates under. So certainly want to work with him, and I mentioned a couple of other areas where I believe that it would make sense to work with you and your staff on a proposed CS for the committee to consider. In addition, I believe I will be meeting with the commissioner on this issue through the weekend, hopefully through the course of this weekend. So, you know, I certainly support trying to iron those things out. That you're right, this is the committee that has the charge of looking out for the community issue. And, of course, part of the discussion on this topic is complicated because the unorganized borough, which we sit as the assembly on, and through this bill we would be establishing the millage rate. It is the economic activity and level of sophistication to support a local government is not uniform in the unorganized borough. And so the one gentleman that testified against this may come from a Delta Junction mindset. There are other areas out there where absolutely no services will be provided to a mining entity outside the property of the mine itself. They will generate their own power. They will have their own garbage disposal. They will do everything because the surrounding area is not of such a nature that it can support any kind of governmental services. And so we've got to try and craft something that fits that area, plus the complication of the Pogo mine, which is right on the boundary of the Fairbanks North Star borough, but also is in potential play for the formation of a borough around the Delta Junction area. Again, as the assembly, we have a complicated task to balance whatever piece of legislation potentially moves forward so that it fits that unequal area in the state of Alaska that we call the unorganized borough. And as far as whether the millage rate suggested is adequate, we also, as assembly members, need to keep in mind that projects may indeed move forward where there is no chance of a local government right now, and they will pay nothing. So it's a balance of what level can be charged to have a contribution, but still ensure that the jobs and the infrastructure get created.
Thank you, Senator. Yes, Senator Stebbins?
Yeah. The point of
the millage rate setting, I assume that this is going to have the same mechanisms that the municipalities and cities function under. That under their scenario, it's annually, but clearly here it's probably going to be less than that. But the legislature would have the authority to go ahead and modify.
I believe that the language that's in there is modeled after that. But that's certainly an area dealing with Mr. Van Zandt. We can make sure that the mechanism is adequate.
I'm not sure I understood your question. As I understand the bill, it says that $4 million would go to education. There could be a potential $2 million in addition, but with a 15-year sort of frozen. Is that true?
Well, the bill says that it gives that coverage for 15 years, but certainly this is a piece of legislation. We as the legislature can modify legislation, but I think that when we strike the balance on what we believe is a reasonable piece of legislation, we want to have some degree of comfort that it is reasonable now and will be reasonable into the future.
Senator Seven,
have a good fall. And maybe we can get this clarified as we go forward, but my understanding is after 15 years and it ends, if the mine life goes on for another 20 or 30, then, deal with it at that time, depending on if there's a borough around it or what have you, they can set their own rate. But in the event, say, in year 7 or 8, it appears that the millage rate set in this bill is either way too high or way too low. The legislature would have the authority to come in, change the millage rate without exposing the state to litigation for changing the time on the 15 years.
That's right, Mr. Chairman. But again, you have to keep in mind that state law applies everywhere. And we would then have the complexity of the millage rate and how does it impact this property versus this property, and it may have a big impact. In fact, with the things that are somewhat speculative right now, the Donnelly Creek mine, tremendous, billion-plus dollar infrastructure. So a low millage rate on that still generates tremendous amount of money versus a much smaller infrastructure for Pogo, but yet we set one millage rate. So it's trying to strike that balance again, just like assemblies do within the boundaries of a borough on, how it applies to all properties within the borough, and does it disadvantage a particular economic activity to make it, fold up its tent while we're trying to get at a different one. They have to balance those things all the time.
Senator Seven?
Good. On the surface, the 6%, the 6 mil seems low relative to how the oil industry is treated up in the interior and with the 20 mil tax assessment. And on the other hand, when I look at this bill and compare it to the industrialized logging enterprises that were put in the 50s and the early 60s in Southeast Alaska, they had millage rates structured more in line with this bill. And I think the scale is more in line with a pulp mill than the oil development on the North Slope. So I'm not really concerned that we're giving away the farm, because I don't think we are, and we have the ability to go back and adjust it. With that being said, the millage rates in the communities I represent are around 6 or a little bit above it. So I'm used to a little lower millage rates than
and Mr. Chairman,
other folks. But.
Senator Stedman, your comparison to the logging operations, commodity-driven industries with tremendous infrastructure, tremendous regulatory oversight, that's a good comparison. Quite often those operations have to generate their own electricity, provide all the housing. It's the same type of activity, I believe. oil and gas, of course, the resource that's being developed has such tremendous value that although certainly the North Slope borough, a very remote, hard place to build the infrastructure that is there, but the return on the commodity itself that's produced is so high, there's not another resource in the state of Alaska that provides that kind of return for the investment. And so that's why there's that difference. And then again, right here in Juneau, the local government, the local assembly, which we would be acting as on behalf of the unorganized borough, has set the Greens Creek millage rate at 6.6.
This is a follow-up, I think, and this ties into some of the comments by the chair, but possibly we should have the commissioner and the tax assessor come in and sit down and we can have Adam and see what comes out of it.
Another issue that I'm not even sure how much we should talk about this, but I understand there are negotiations going on with the Deltana Borough Charter Commission with the Pogo mine people, is that right? And they're trying to work out some details of their arrangement. I'm a little uncomfortable even getting into that discussion, but this would trump any discussion that's going on if we were to pass this bill.
Well, except for Mr. Chairman, they, of course, still could form a borough. They would be capped at the 6 mil if that's what the legislature sets it at. They would have the opportunity, the bill talks about a sales tax and the taxation of the mining activity. Certainly the legislature can talk about the length of time, whether 15 years, as suggested in the original draft, is appropriate or should it be something lower. Certainly in the Pogo area, they hope to find reserves that extend the life of the mine, just like in Fort Knox they've done with further exploration. But we have to keep in mind that we want to see the initial investment get made, and I certainly am mindful that although there are some people that, while they will argue that, no, you have to tax, make sure that you get the full value for the tax, what they really are interested in is discouraging the activity from taking place at all.
Certainly. Mines have occurred in areas that have been organized boroughs, and right now in an area that I represent, a portion of Lake and Penn, they're dealing with the potential of the Pebble Mine, and who knows how that's going to finally turn out, but it does seem like there's the local government has to look at what's benefits for itself, jobs that are available, and not overtaxing to discourage the companies from coming in. So even in those areas that are organized, there are still ongoing mine developments that are on the horizon.
Right, and Mr. Chairman, that this debate is taking place right now in the Lake and Penn Borough, and there's a local government entity there for the mine to have that debate with. But in the rest of the unorganized borough, there's no local government to have that debate with. And so, therefore, that debate's taking place in this building because, right, as the Constitution mandates, we sit as the assembly for the unorganized borough. So the same debate that's taking place there is just taking place here in this building.
Any further comments? This is a bill of enormous consequences, it seems to me, and I think we can well take the time to sit down and talk about it, to get together the right people, and try to move forward with the CS. So at that point, then, we'll carry this over. Thank you, Senator Terrio. If there's nothing further, the meeting is adjourned.